Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Thinking sideways.
I don't understand.
Does not compute.
You never know.
Insufficient data to formulate a reply.
What?
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I'm Joe, joined as always by my lovely co-host,
Devin.
And Steve.
And all your right. Normal co-host, Steve.
Oh, he's lovely,
hey,
too.
Wait, that wasn't very nice.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm lovely.
Yeah. All right, so we're gonna solve another cool mystery this week. Our mystery this week is set in the town of Keddie, California. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we're talking about the Keddie UFO incident.
No. Don't get people's hopes up.
No, I know. No UFOs in Keddie. And there might have been. I don't know. But just a brief warning. This is about a multiple murder mystery, and it's kind of gruesome.
So. Super gruesome.
It's not nice.
I was not excited doing the research.
Yeah,
I'll
I don't want to.
You should have watched the documentary.
Nah.
Did you read the autopsy reports?
Maybe. Was it in the research?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then yes.
Yeah. I don't blame you for skipping that part.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, at least there were no photos.
Yeah.
Although, you know, it's funny. Go ahead. I'm not going to go off on that rabbit hole.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking about the Keddie murders. Yes. Famous Keddie murders from 1981. But first, I want to give a shout out to our listener, Clarissa. Hello, Clarissa. Sorry, Clarissa. I'm sure you get that a lot. So sorry. But anyway, actually, I found this one of my own like a while back, and as I was researching it for this week's episode, I went through the listener suggestions and discovered that, yes, actually somebody had suggested it, so
there you go.
You got to give credit where credit is due. Yep.
Indeed.
So, yeah, thanks, Clarissa. Okay, let's talk about Keddie briefly. So Keddie, California is a very small town. It's getting smaller. It's, population in population in the year 2000 was 96. Population in 2010 was 66.
That's almost like Wagontire, Oregon.
I know. It's it started out, actually, it's kind of successful when it was first founded, I believe, in 1910. It was a kind of a waypoint on the rail line up to Yosemite or somewhere. Or off to Utah, and so there was a nice little resort there, and it was a pleasant little place, nice scenery. But it had fallen on hard times by the time our mystery had occurred, and it was not really so much a resort town anymore. There were still all these cabins in this resort. The guy who bought the resort and owned it, tourists weren't coming there. So he wound up renting the cabins out as low-income housing.
Well, that was nice of him.
Well, you got to pay the mortgage.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, but...
When you find tenants where you can find tenants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be low income housing.
Joe, where, so people have an idea, Keddie is close to what major town for people to know?
It's about 90 miles northwest of Reno, about 80 miles east of Red Bluff, California, about 60 miles maybe northeast of Chico, California.
As the crow flies, yeah.
Yeah. So.
The whole area is a national forest.
Yeah, it's in the middle of the national forest is it?
I think it's the Plumas National Forest.
Because it's in Plumas County. That would make sense.
That would make sense.
That would make a lot of sense. Yeah. You know, that area of California is really beautiful. The Sierras are just really nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, have you ever gone on any of those? I mean, obviously, I've never been to this particular town, but have you ever driven through some of that area? It's a slow drive, but it's not because it's windy roads. It's because you want to take a look around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except you don't want to stop in Keddie.
I don't.
No.
Yeah. Our mystery begins in Keddie in cabin 28 of the resort, which is, of course, not really a resort anymore. Cabin 28 was being rented to Glenna Sharp, who went by the name of Sue, and her five kids, John, Sheila, Tina, Ricky, and Greg. She had a lot of kids. So John
How old were they?
John was 15, Sheila was 17, Tina was 12, and the youngest were Ricky and Greg. They were 10 and 5.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was, did you say she was 36? Is that right?
She was, 36.
Oh my 36. Gosh.
So that's a passel of kids in a short amount of time.
She cranked out a bunch of them. She'd moved into that cabin 28, in November 1980. So they hadn't been living there that long, really, maybe half a year. On the night of April 11th, 1981, a fateful night, Sheila was the 14-year-old daughter.
17.
Oh, no, yeah, 17, you're right. Yeah. Okay, yeah, John was 14.
15. Sorry.
You're right. All right.
This is the episode where I get to correct you.
I know. Ah, serves me right.
Ha.
So Sheila goes next door to cabin 27 for a sleepover with a friend. And Justin Eason, who lived in cabin 26, was friends with the two youngest boys. So he was over at their place for a sleepover.
And this was a Saturday night?
Yeah.
Yeah. So sleepovers on a weekend makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I remembered it being a weekend. I just couldn't remember what day.
Yeah, it was a Saturday. Here's a fun fact, too. Justin Eason was the stepson of one of the suspects for the murder.
Yeah.
So those three boys, the youngest ones, went to bed in the back bedroom at some undetermined time. Then John Sharp, he was a 15-year-old, spent most of the day hanging with a friend named Dana Wingate in a town called Quincy, which is several miles south of Keddie. And they were seen on Highway 70, apparently by a couple who was driving on the highway. Why they didn't stop and pick them up, I don't know. They were hitchhiking back to Keddie from Quincy, and they were seen between 9 and 10 p.m., although I've seen another timeline that has them spotted on the highway at 11 p.m. So there's a little bit of a conflict there.
Well, and I know that those boys had been at Dana's house and had asked to go if they could stay over at Johnny's house, and one of the stipulations was, yeah, you're welcome to go as long as you can get a ride, you don't hitchhike.
We won't hitchhike anyway.
Don't worry, no big deal. And obviously they
did.
Totally lied and did it anyway, which is a teenage boy thing to do.
It is, definitely. I'm not sure what it was like. I mean, I hitchhiked a lot when I was, not a lot actually, but I hitchhiked some when I was a teenager. And it was a lot easier to get rides back in those days. And then we had a few murders here and there. And suddenly people are not really into picking up hitchhikers anymore.
I've never picked up a hitchhike, nor have I ever hitchhiked ever. Yeah.
I haven't hitchhiked, but I grew up in a really small town where you knew most of the guys, and it was typically guys, most of the guys you saw walking down the street. So you'd be driving down, oh, there's Mark. Let me pull over and give Mark a ride. And so Mark would come running in the car. Hey, thanks, buddy. And you give Mark a ride, at least as far as you were going. I wouldn't go out of my way.
Right.
But hey, I can get you here. And then you're on your own from there and save them 10 miles. They're happy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Totally.
Hell yeah. Well, anyway, back to these guys. So Dana, as you said, was planning on spending the night at Cabin 28, which, bad idea, Dana. Really bad idea. It's unclear when they arrived. Some people have hypothesized that perhaps the crime was already underway when they showed up. And just their bad luck, really bad timing on their part.
Have people theorized that they brought the crime with them?
Yeah, actually. That is definitely one of the possibilities I would consider.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you get picked up by Mr. Psycho Killer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And takes you home and comes inside with you and
Can I use your bathroom?
Yeah.
All right, well, you two have been alluding to what's going on, but our listeners don't know what's going on.
Oh yeah, so we got to tell you about
the crime. Let's tell them what's happened here because so far we've just bored them with information about people that don't matter.
That's fair.
Yeah, Dana's coming home with Johnny Sharp, and he's gonna spend the night there. They've got a sleepover in the back bedroom. Three young boys back there already gone to bed. Sue Sharp and her daughter Tina, who's 12, are not yet asleep. Tina might have been asleep, I'm not sure, but more about that in a second. On the morning of April 12th, Sheila Sharp, who remember went next door for a sleepover, she came home about 8 a.m. and discovered that she was an orphan. Unfortunately,
why do you have to put it that way?
Yeah, actually, it turns out she really wasn't an orphan. I checked, and actually, she had a father still living, and so the surviving Sharp children went to live with the father. So that's good. So she wasn't really an orphan.
That's good.
I just couldn't resist. So Sue, her son Johnny Sharp, and the friend Dana Wingate had all been bludgeoned and stabbed to death. Yeah, a really horrible, bloody crime.
Yeah,
Tina Sharp was missing. Tina Sharp, the 12-year-old girl, was gone. Yeah. The bodies have been tied up with white adhesive tape, probably medical tape, and also electrical wire, extension cords, basically. And then they were, like, you know, beaten to death with a hammer and then stabbed to death. Amazingly, the three young boys in the back bedroom were untouched, and it appeared that they slept through the whole thing, although that's hard to imagine exactly how they could have done that.
Yeah, I have run through my head a million scenarios on how that would have happened, and as of yet, I can't figure out a way.
Well, you know, here's the thing about kids, particularly kids of that age, is when they sleep, they sleep. Mm-hmm. Particularly if they've been raised in maybe a kind of more difficult home life environment. You know, if you're trained from a child as a baby to sleep through stuff, which is what you do with babies because you have to get stuff done while they're sleeping, they can pretty much sleep. Usually, you know, 5 to 10-year-olds can sleep through, you know, at least vacuuming and stuff like that. And, you know, unless it's possible that these murders were carried out without a whole lot of screaming.
It is possible.
Given some of the injuries, it's possible that there wasn't actual screaming, and then, you know, all the rest of the noises could have been relatively quiet.
Well, and if there's a TV on and you're used to hearing the TV, then in your little kid brain, that all melds together. I mean, I know that I slept through earthquakes as a kid.
Oh, I did too.
I once rolled out of the top bunk of a bunk bed as a kid in my sleep and didn't wake up. So I know that kids can sleep. Yeah, well, that tells you a lot about me now.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure I landed on my head.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, that does explain it. But the other thing is that, you know, the only thing that I could figure out how these boys could have slept through it, if indeed they did, is that Sue, she had, I think it was her underwear and a rag crammed in her mouth as a gag.
Yeah, it was like a blue bandana.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the blue bandana, which was jammed into her mouth fairly deep.
Yeah.
And then secured with adhesive tape, and then like, women's underwear wrapped around that. So,
I don't even want to get into the Freudian reason that's there, but the
two boys were not gagged, as far as I know.
Was she the only one who was stabbed through the neck?
No, actually, it was her son John got stabbed through the neck,
right?
And so that the cause of death in the case of John was severing of the carotid artery.
Mm-hmm. Well, that could sever some vocal cords.
Yeah.
Well, but the thing is, they were tied up. Well, let me ask you this: are we going to get into the rest of the details
about
of
how
the
they died?
Crime later, or should we just do it now?
Well, no, I was going to.
Finish the story.
Talk about the autopsy in a minute here, but I
let's finish.
Okay, because there's some things about like what you were saying.
Yeah.
I know some details, but I don't want to jump the shark here.
Yeah. Well,
that's the wrong term.
Yeah, that's the wrong term. Totally. And our show will never jump.
Never.
Never.
Hey.
Yeah. There is some dispute about whether Justin Easton actually did wake up and open the door and look out and witness some or all of this. And he's given such wildly varying accounts.
How old is he, though?
I'm not sure. I think he was 10 or 12, something like that.
He was friends with the younger two.
He was friends with the younger two.
Yeah. So, yeah, anywhere from, I guess, 5 to 12, probably.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Yeah, I can see how your story could change a couple times.
Yeah.
The hard thing about his story and the way that it changed is what happened. I know that I was the only one who went ahead and sacrificed 3 hours of my life to watch the documentaries that were made on this set of murders.
Thank you for suffering through for us. Yeah.
Really, and to all our listeners, I did it for you. You don't have to listen to the weird mono and then stereo audio thing that goes on in this documentary. But they record him and they talk about it. And one is when you listen to this guy tell the account of what happens, and I understand it's 20-some years later because the documentary was done in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. He's been telling this story for years. Mm-hmm. But you could see he is just glaze-eyed, repeating things like there's no emotion. He's not thinking about it. He's regurgitating words. We were watching it on the couch and my fiance was sitting there watching it. I was listening to the audio in headphones and she's going, there's something weird about that dude. And I imagine it's because of what he went through and then all of the attention that was paid on him. Yeah. But the hard part is I have a hard part with his story and I blame it on the cops. Do you guys know that the cops put him under hypnosis?
Yeah. What?
Yeah. Yeah, the lead investigator had him hypnotized. So he told the story once, it shifted a little bit. They hypnotized him, it shifted a little bit. And then it just kind of, it did this weird progression through time. So I would like to say that he didn't see anything.
I kind of suspect that he didn't. And he said himself, like, you know, on one account, he, like, got up and opened the door and saw this. And another account, it's like he had a dream. He just dreamed the whole thing. So and the thing about hypnosis, too, is you can't force somebody to be hypnotized. The subject has to want to be hypnotized.
Well,
so maybe they didn't even have him actually under.
Well, that's exactly it. Because during hypnosis, I think one of the things he said is that he was watching from a crack in the bedroom door as he watched he said it was two men, watched them go out into the kitchen and out the kitchen door. But evidently, when you're standing in that bedroom, you can't see the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. I think, I think that this, what it sounds like to me, is like a little kid trying to be helpful.
Yeah.
You know?
Nail on the head.
You know, it's a little kid who was like traumatized, quite frankly, by what they saw and trying to be helpful. And if a cop, you know, is in your face saying, okay, Justin, what'd you see? And you go, nothing. And they go, are you sure you didn't see anything? And you go, well, no, I guess I cracked the door. I woke up. They're like,
maybe?
Yeah, because there's no way you could have slept through that, Justin. You're right. You could have. You must have woken up. And then what? You know, and cops often think they're, you know, being helpful or whatever with that. They're actually pulling the story out of the kid.
Yeah, they're
the
leading,
kid's just sitting there going,
leading question.
Oh, God, I got to think of something now because this happened. So I don't know. I didn't see the video, obviously, so I don't know.
I put him under highly questionable as a witness to this whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of the point that I want to get to.
So do I. Yeah, I definitely do.
I'm glad we're on the same page.
Oh, cool. Definitely. As I mentioned, Tina was missing. Justin was actually the first person that I know of who pointed out that Tina was missing.
In my opinion, the only beneficial thing he did.
Yeah, I know. And funny thing, too, is he mentioned that the cops weren't really paying attention. Eventually, they concluded that Tina was indeed missing.
It was one of the parents got involved and listened to him and finally figured out, oh, yeah, there's a kid missing.
Yeah, it's funny. The cops, after questioning Justin, sent him home. He went home about 8:30 maybe that morning, down to cabin 26.
Mm.
And his mom said something to him like, you know, how was it or how is it or how are they? And he said, they're all dead. And she's like, yeah, don't joke around like that. And he's going, no, Mom, they're all dead. Mm. The Sharps are all dead. And she finally figured out that,
he wasn't screwing around.
Yeah. And so maybe that's one reason he's a little messed up.
Well, I don't blame him for his shifting story. I blame the situation.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
So they started looking for Tina.
Yeah, the major girl hunt was undertaken for Tina Sharp, and she was not found. In April 1984, a guy named Ronald Pedrini was looking for antique bottles and such things in the woods around Camp 18, which is a place about 29 miles away from Keddy, and found part of a human skull. So he called the cops, and they took it in possession. And they did a search of the immediate area and found nothing.
Oh, that's not what I heard.
Yeah, well, no, that was in April. About 6 weeks later, they got an anonymous phone call. Mm-hmm. I think it was on May 30th. Somebody told them to look more around Camp 18. And they found more. They found bones. They found, most importantly, they found a lower jawbone.
Yeah, and, quote, other evidence pieces, right?
Other evidence pieces, yeah. Part of some blue jeans, and stuff. I'm not sure if they documented that stuff actually belonged to Tina or not.
Sure. I don't know if you could at that point.
Yeah, I know. But the lower jawbone was key because they could identify her through dental records.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... So it's hard to say what happened to Tina. Obviously, they took her for a reason. I don't think they just killed her and hauled her body away. But we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Steve's making a
Do
face.
We have to?
Yeah.
It's 2 weeks in a row. Really? Come on, you guys. You're killing me here.
Well, on a more cheerful note, you guys want to talk about autopsies?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk
Yay!
About autopsies.
Autopsy.
Okay, Sue Sharp first. Her autopsy reported considerable dried and smeared blood on the soles of her feet, which is interesting, which indicates that she actually was on her feet, because she didn't have wounds on her feet, but she was on her feet, apparently, walking through blood at some point. They found her on the couch, laying down on the couch with a blanket over her.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at some point, she had walked through the blood. Nobody really knows why at this point. Her wrists and ankles were bound by white adhesive tape.
Did they find footprints in the blood? On the floor?
I have not found any mention of that. They probably were bloody footprints.
I didn't see anything about...
I guess it would be hard because Sheila came home and likely checked the bat, right? She's the one who discovered this scene.
She didn't go in the house.
Oh, she didn't?
She opened the door and looked in and saw everything and screamed and ran.
Oh, yeah.
Smart girl.
Yeah, that's what I'd do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, never mind.
But no, I've looked at those pretty extensively, unfortunately. I've looked at the crime scene photos.
So have I.
And... there are blood smears all over the place.
As you would expect.
Yes, yeah.
But I didn't see footprints, so it's almost like there was blood and you were standing in the pool of it and then moved somewhere else, so you're not walking.
Yeah.
If you catch what I'm going for here, is you were standing in it and then you're not walking anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. I didn't see footprints anywhere.
No, I didn't see any either. And they're not mentioned anywhere in any of the police reports. Oh, anyway, back to her autopsy. So she had been, she was taken into the morgue, by the way, all still bound up and everything. So there's a pretty in-depth description in the autopsy report of the way she was, all her wounds and how she was bound up. They used electrical extension cords to tie her up in addition to the tape. There was one around her wrist, and then the second one was heavier. It was tied to her wrist, and then it went down to her ankles and tied her ankles together. So she was
kind of hogtied.
She was all, yeah, but not hogtied with her hands behind her. Her hands were in front of her.
Oh, you're right. No, I'm sorry. Hogtied's the wrong way, but it was
ankles and wrists.
Wrists connected.
Yeah, she was well immobilized.
Loosely, but connected.
Yeah, and of course, we've already talked about the gag, which was, embedded deeply in the mouth, unquote, according to the autopsy. There was evidence around her head and face of a lot of blunt force trauma, which is, of course, the hammer. This was done with a hammer, which was found at the crime scene. There are lots of lacerations, also stab wounds in the chest and abdomen and one in the neck. So the cause of death was listed for her blunt force trauma and stabbing. So in other words, it's not quite clear if she died of brain injuries first or being stabbed in the chest and
bled out.
Yeah, so both, they just flipped a coin. Dana Wingate, on the other hand, he'd been beaten about the head, but he was not stabbed at all. He was strangled to death. His legs were also bound with his electrical cord, but his wrists were bound with tape only, which indicates that I guess they'd run out of extension cords.
I think so.
Yeah. Head and face showed blunt force trauma, but again, not stabbed. And it appears that he might have been killed by the blows to the head, but
strangled
laid him on his back and strangled him for good measure.
So... before we get onto the next one, I know we've talked about it a couple of times now in this description is the medical tape. There was a lot of medical tape used to bind these people, enough that it was more than one roll, and they weren't the same kind.
Yeah, and they
were different widths.
They had a good supply of it.
Yeah, that's the weird thing is I can understand. I mean, we've all got medical tape in the medicine cabinet, the little silly spool that you get when you buy gauze or whatever, but this was a lot of medical tape. When you think a couple of loops around ankles and then wrists and through multiple people, that was I mean, I don't understand why there was so much medical tape.
That's something I haven't figured out either. Somebody, I mean, it's, you know, probably what they should have done was searched every house and gone through everybody's medical, you know, medical supplies, and whoever was missing all their tape, hey, you know, you're the killer.
Joe always has a really simple explanation.
I know.
Like that,
I know.
Right? Well, all you have to do is do this, and then hey, they're the killer.
Yeah. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, it appears that most, if not all, of the weapons and equipment were found on scene. Like, for example, the you know, the hammer, I believe, was found there, and the steak knife was easily found in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you're going to tie people up and you're planted ahead and you're bringing your supplies, you're going to bring rope and not electrical cord. So that was,
or medical tape.
Yeah. The medical tape is something that the killer might have brought with.
Maybe
or
had
it might
in
have
car.
Been there.
I have a first aid kit in my car.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
But, and the thing about the medical tape is, I mean, we started to talk about this earlier, is that the medical tape, there was no blood underneath it, which means these people were all taped up.
And then killed.
And then killed.
Yeah.
Same thing with it's harder to tell with electrical cord, but the tape made a very clear band when removed.
Yeah.
There was nothing under it. So they were taped up before they were killed.
In fairness, you would do that. You wouldn't. Why would you tape a dead body up?
To stage a scene.
Yeah, I guess.
People do that. People stage scenes, but I'm just saying it wasn't staged at all. It was, it was weird that they taped and then tied the cords.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about. If that was just for good measure or what? It may be if this person who did this or persons. It may be that medical tape was just something to keep in good supply because you actually planned on doing something like this. So, you know, so you're driving around in your car and you pick up a couple of hitchhikers and you decide, you know, you're going to commit a little multiple murder action tonight. And so you just reach under the seat where you've got your stash of this stuff that you use for tying people up. You know, maybe that was it.
Go ahead.
Sorry. The extension cords, it seems like they were only used to do the what we're calling hog tying.
No, it's not hog tying, but it's...
Whatever. The, like, tying from the arms to the legs to the wrist, right?
Yeah. Well, that was on Sue only.
On Sue only.
Oh, John wasn't tied like that, too?
No, the boys were tied together.
They were, yeah. They had tape around their wrists, they had tape around their legs, too, and then they had... One long extension cord was tied around Dana's legs, and then it went over to the other half of it was used to tie John.
Okay, but, that's John's weird. Legs. I don't know why.
Well, yeah, no, and the thing about that is that when I kept reading the description, I thought that they were found feet to feet, but no, they were laying parallel to each other. It was just a long enough extension
cord. That's weird to me. I was going to say it would make sense that you would have to improvise or use an extension cord if you were going to try and tie a length like that because you couldn't use tape necessarily, but I don't know why.
I've never seen anything about this, but I also wonder if, again, okay, somebody used what they found on site, electrical cords. Sue had 5 kids that lived in a rural area. Kids screw around and they get hurt, so I wonder if that was something she had in her medical kit, so to speak. And again, it was just something of convenience.
A couple rolls, maybe. You know, you get one and you lose it, you misplace it, you got to go get another one.
And then you find the first one.
You find the first one. Yeah, that's true.
Was a lot. And also, there would be a plentiful supply of extension cords in this place because it's an old cabin. There's probably no more than one electrical outlet per room. So there's going to be lots of extension cords.
Absolutely.
You can bet
on that. One of the extension cords was from Sue and Tina's room. One was from the living room. So, they pulled them from multiple rooms.
Yeah. Anyway, quickly about John Sharp. There's not much more to be said about him. His autopsy indicated again that he was killed by the severing of his carotid artery, but he, again, had a lot of blunt force trauma. A really vicious crime. I mean, bashing somebody in the head and the face with a hammer and then and stabbing them with a knife. Yeah, pretty appalling crime. Okay, the wall. Oh, yeah, one other thing. The walls had been apparently stabbed. And somebody had, like, stabbed the walls.
Yeah, when you were a kid, did you ever try to throw a knife into a tree?
Oh, yeah.
It seemed like that.
Yeah.
Like there was just gazillions of little stab marks in several walls as if somebody was trying to throw a knife into a wall and get it to stick.
You know, that
odd.
But that gives, you know, it does make you wonder if perhaps they were looking for something. Like they were looking for a false compartment behind a wall.
That's true.
Yeah. You're using it as kind of a sound, sounding board.
Yeah. One theory that has been put forth, this is apparently what somebody somewhere in the town, so there's a lot of statements that are out there in the record is being made by whom to whom. Like, the record is not always clear.
It's a little town full of tons and tons of rumors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of them. One rumor was that it was a drug deal gone bad, and then a couple of people were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Presumably that's John and Dana.
Mm.
And so...
And Tina.
And Tina, yeah, that's
right?
True. Yeah.
I mean...
I don't agree with the drug deal gone bad, but is that in your... I'm assuming that's in the theory section, or should we talk about that now?
No, we can talk about it now. It's not really in the theory section, because the thing about it is there's no evidence. Like, one of the suspects, there was some evidence that he actually sold hash and supplemented his income selling hash. But there's no evidence of the kind of high-value drug smuggling presence in that town that would actually motivate you to murder somebody.
Well, coke moved through that town evidently at that time.
Yeah.
Cocaine was a trade.
But in quantities sufficient to cause somebody to get murdered?
Well, and the thing is, Sue was clean. There was no drugs in her system when they did the autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't drink. She didn't do drugs, as far as I could tell. I had a hard time tracking down her background. Maybe you found better information than I did. Mm-hmm. But from everything that I found, she was a straight arrow.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know why she would have been involved in anything like that.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
In fairness, though, straight arrows make the best dealers.
That's true.
Well, but she also, and maybe this is in your theory section, she had a couple of skeezy boyfriends.
Yeah, that's not the theory section either. But yeah, but you're right. I mean, actually, a straight arrow would, if nothing else, make for a good courier, a good or a good place to stash your stuff.
Yeah,
that's why I was so good in the drug trade. I mean, yeah. I would make that understand why that would work.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the skull before we move on? The soft tissue bit.
Soft tissue bit? Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that's really interesting and compelling.
Yeah, well, we should talk about that. Yeah, back to Tina's skull. It was found 3 years, almost 3 years to the day. It was like 3 years and 10 days, I think, or 3 years and 11 days afterwards. And it wasn't particularly weathered, which indicated it hadn't been in that spot probably for the whole 3 years. And it actually still had some soft tissue in it.
It did?
Yeah.
Oh,
still has some brain matter in there and stuff, which would indicate, because if it had been there for 3 years, the bugs and everything would have cleaned that out.
Mm-hmm.
So
if it had been outdoors even for 3 years.
Yeah.
Not just in that area.
Now, that conflicts with the stuff that I've seen from the coroner who examined it, because he said it was clean.
Oh, really?
There was no organic material left on it. It was stained on one side from the dirt, but slightly bleached on the other, meaning it had sat in the same spot that wasn't a sunny spot, but did get sun for at least a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's...
Unfortunately, I apologize to our listeners.
That's what he said, but I don't know if his recollection is right, because it was an interview done with him years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this is the hard part, is that there's so many interpretations.
Yeah, it is easy to turn. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly when her body was put there. I don't think she was murdered immediately
I don't either.
Yeah, it's horrifying to think about, but I think she might have lived for quite a while after being kidnapped.
I don't agree with how... I think she lived a day or two, but
It might have just been a day or two. It could have been longer. I don't know. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but...
Yeah.
I'll list a few suspects here. Martin Ray Smart, also known as Marty Smart. Marty Smart.
I'm sorry, I never really paid attention to the fact that it's Marty Smart.
Yeah, Marty, it makes me want to say Mighty Smart.
Well, it makes me think of that, what was that silly detective show in the 60s?
Yeah, Get Smart.
Yeah, Get Smart. That's
Oh,
what
I was
going to
say it
of.
Reminds me of Axeman.
Oh.
Right? What is it, like, Joward and Goward Snowward and yeah. Robert and Bobbert Smartest and, yeah. No?
Like Axeman?
Yeah. Yeah. We've watched it. It's fine.
Okay.
So, Marty Smart.
Yeah, Marty Smart. Yeah, lived in cabin 26. He was not a model citizen. Supposedly, it's rumored that in the 70s, he was living in Phoenix at that time and tried to murder his brother and expressed a desire to blow up his parents' house.
Cool.
Well, that's normal.
Yeah, apparently he went off to look for explosives but changed his mind. So, good. That's lucky for the parents, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Marilyn said that at some point in 1980...
Sorry, who's Marilyn?
Oh, yeah. That was his wife, Marilyn. Sorry, I didn't mention that. Yeah, he married Marilyn, I think, in 79.
Marilyn being Justin's mom?
Yeah, Justin's okay. mom.
Got
yeah.
it.
Married...
Was it Justin Smart? Was his name Smart at that
his
time?
Name was
it?
Justin Eason. I think he kept
Eason.
His dad's
okay.
name. Yeah.
All right. So I just thought, yeah, because that was one of my hard parts with this. His names flip yeah. all over the place.
And yeah, they're not always consistent or correct in the websites. And like all these people in this town are named, and this person was drove over to his place and saw him do that, and there's all these different names, mm-hmm. and it's hard to keep track of the whole thing.
Yep.
Yeah, but
I could make infographics about just about every one of these stories.
You could, yeah.
I'm not going to, though.
No, it's not worth the effort. But Marilyn said that he actually tried to run her and the kids over in 1980 with a car.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, apparently had a real anger problem.
Happy marriage.
Yeah, I know. He was Marty Smart, was the guy that was selling hash. Mm. One person in town reportedly said he saw a brick of hash that looked like it weighed about a pound in Marty's house.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no.
So that's, much.
That's a lot of hash. That'd last me a week or two.
Make a good fire.
Yeah. In March 1981, he went to the Reno Veterans Administration Hospital to check into the psych ward. Because he was apparently having some psych problems.
That evidently was at the request of his wife.
Yeah.
She coerced him or friends of his to talk him into going and getting checked in for help.
Because he had relationship issues
and
anger management. Yeah, and that's one of the things he discussed with the therapist.
Yeah.
He's having marriage problems. She was threatening to divorce him. He had anger problems. Oh, yeah, another indication he had anger problems is that at one point he threatened to break Johnny Sharp's hands.
The 10-year-old Johnny Sharp?
The 15-year-old Johnny Sharp.
Oh, the 15-year-old,
yeah, yeah.
Right.
He apparently,
that's not that much better, really.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, his wife said, Marilyn said, that he didn't like teenagers, period. He thought they were all punks. He really didn't like
women. Well,
they are. Yeah.
Not all of them.
Yeah, and didn't like women particularly either. Thought they were all sluts and whores. So, yeah, the guy was...
Men like
he
that.
Had serious issues.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He later claimed to his therapist that he thought he had PTSD from his time in Vietnam. Although it turns out he had really soft duty in Vietnam.
He was a cook.
He was a cook, and he was far, far away from the war zone. And so he probably had, if you want to avoid getting shot, the best possible place to be in Vietnam. If you were with the U.S. military. So his therapist really shot that down.
Yeah.
Yeah, was rightfully so.
Can I give you my impression of Marty? Or Martin, depending on which thing you read. I've known a lot of guys like him.
Because you come from a small town.
Because
like
I come from a small town where a bunch of guys went to Vietnam and they came back and it's a rural community and they didn't get the help they needed. And they have a lot of macho bravado about them because that's their defense mechanism. And they'd say, listen, I'm going to beat the crap out of you or I'm going to kill you. And some of it was just... A lot of it was talk from a lot of it, but there were some where you went, oh, wait, that guy's actually kind of serious and a little scary. And Martin Smart, he strikes me as a little leaning towards the serious, scary side than the full of hot air side.
Yeah, possibly. He did have a history of violence.
Well, and the things that he said, they're very indicative of things that I've heard before. But the things that he's done that his actions or why I'm like, yeah, part of that wasn't actually an act. He was had a few screws loose.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sounds like. But yeah, the thing about small towns is that the nutcases and psychos, you really can't avoid running into them. If you live in a big city, they're kind of self-segregating. They're living off in the poor part of town, and yeah. you hopefully are not. And then,
well, it's also terrible because the cycle for them is so much smaller and tighter. Think about it. You live in a metro area, and you've got some issues, and you run into somebody, and they anger you, and you think about it, but you don't see that person for 6 months, so by the time you see them, all that pent-up whatever has just kind of dissipated. Whereas if you run into somebody, and you live in a small town, and they've done something to anger you, and it's starting to cycle up, and then you see them 3 days later, it cycles up more.
Mm-hmm.
4 days later, 2 days later. Like, yeah. It just, these situations are pressure cookers for a personality mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, small towns aren't all, just not all milk and honey.
No, yeah, not rainbows.
And small towns, interestingly enough, they vary in their culture. Like, I spent most of my younger years in a small town, and I think it's fair to say there was another town about 7 miles away that culturally was significantly different from ours, and it really is true. It's not all Mayberry or anything like that. No. Some of them are. Some of them are really nice places full of nice people, you know, and some of them are full of jerks. Yeah.
People with problems.
Yeah.
Can we start talking about the...
You want to get back to the mystery?
Sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm totally off here.
Yeah, we really kind of delve into that a little bit too much.
I can't commiserate, so I'm bored.
That's true. Okay, so back to the veteran. So he's in the psych ward. Uh-huh. His claim for PTSD has been kind of rebuffed.
Bunk.
Yeah, and eventually he checked out and went back to Ketty, and he brought a friend that he'd met in the VA hospital. Another guy with mental issues.
Good idea.
Yeah, I'll talk about this guy a little bit later. Marty, we're still talking about Marty being a suspect. Apparently, somebody recalled him saying on April 4th or the 11th that somebody knew it was a Saturday, but couldn't remember specifically what date it was. But Marty had told him that if Marty didn't get things straightened out, he might kill somebody.
And was that, I could never clue in, was that straightened out with his wife or just straightened out in general, or do you know?
It's very vague. It's very vague, yeah. Marty, of course, was a suspect. I think one of the things that sort of got the police interested in him is that his wife, the day of April 12th, when the bodies were discovered, his wife moved out.
Well, and her son was one of the surviving boys as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it would explain why his story changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if he opened the door and saw his stepdad, like, killing a bunch of people.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You might say, yeah, I saw something. And they'd say, okay, son, what'd you see? And you'd go, nothing.
Yeah. I don't want to get a whooping. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. He might kill me, too. Nothing.
Could have been that, although it's... you know, if Marty Smart was as abusive as some people say he was towards Marilyn and possibly the kids also, wouldn't that be a grand opportunity to say, yeah, it was my stepdad murdering those people, and so he gets carted off to prison, and your mom can go find a better stepdad.
Yeah, but I guess there's that fear. There's the irrational fear.
Oh, yeah.
At 12?
Yeah.
Among us as adults, that's a very easy, logical thing to say, hey, I can get rid of this jerk.
Mm-hmm.
But as a kid, you don't know because, you know, you just don't have the life experience and your emotions are all erratic and weird.
Mm-hmm.
That's an easy way to think, but
yeah.
That's not the way that the kids at that age think.
Probably not, but I have no idea if Justin witnessed anything or not. I don't think he did.
I kind of doubt
it, but yeah, we've talked about it. Marty, of course, was a suspect. Again, he lived two doors down, history of violence. He was known to not like Sue because he believed that Sue was trying to persuade Marilyn to leave him.
She probably was because she was a good friend.
Yeah.
And he was a bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And he at one point in his sessions with a psychotherapist, did talk about this quote-unquote bitch who was trying to turn his wife against him. And that, undoubtedly, that was probably Sue.
Mm.
He had a motive.
Yeah.
Not really much of a motive. I don't think that's enough of a motive for any rational person to murder four people.
Yeah, but he may not have been rational.
Motive doesn't have to be rational.
Yeah. So he was questioned and everything, and he took a polygraph test, which he passed. But then a month after the murders, this didn't come to light until years later, you know, and for a reason. But the month after the murders, he talked to his therapist to get at the VA, and he said that he had killed Sue Sharp. And he said he did it because Sue was trying to talk Marilyn into leaving him.
Mm. Wait, when did he talk to the therapist?
That would have been in 1981.
Oh, then, I thought it was later on than that.
No, it was in 1981.
Okay.
And then, unless of course, the source where I got this is, again, confused about the timelines. There are so many timelines out there and so many different statements by various people. The therapist, of course, couldn't reveal this. They can't, but after Marty died, he died in the year 2000. The therapist apparently waited 10 years. Maybe that's the
statutory. Well, no, I think the therapist did contact the police.
The therapist.
And because they're required by law to give that information, mm-hmm. you know, client confidentiality only goes so far.
Doesn't cover murder.
Yeah, it doesn't cover murder.
Yeah, yeah.
But the cops got the information and then did nothing with it.
Yeah, so there was a little bit of incompetence there, or otherwise, who knows. Apparently the therapist contacted them again some years later after Marty died and brought the issue up again, and they reopened the investigation or at least took a look at it. But again, it's a cold case by this time. It's 2010, I think, when he took it up with them again.
When he was already dead at that point.
Yeah, he was dead 10 years. Mm. And interestingly, though, Marty said nothing about the other murders. He didn't say anything about those. He just said he killed Sue.
Hmm.
Yeah. Interesting.
Weird.
Yeah.
Very. That doesn't make sense.
It really doesn't, because what that would mean is he goes over there and he kills Sue, and then... And leaves her corpse on the couch with a blanket over it, and then maybe the other two come, the two boys come home with the psycho killer who's giving them a ride, and then the psycho killer murders them.
This is the weirdest bad luck scenario.
Would that be an amazing coincidence?
Alternately, she doesn't seem the type, but she for whatever reason kills the boys and. Then
bludgeons herself to death.
Then Marty comes over for whatever reason, and because he's riled up or whatever.
Well, he was drunk that night.
Right. So it explains her blood on her feet. Right. And then he sees what happened and was already angry at her and kills her in a similar manner and ties her up and leaves her on the couch, and I don't know what happens to Tina. She runs away.
That makes even less sense.
I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Tina runs
away.
No,
I mean, it's a theory, but...
Yeah, mm. she's hitchhiking on Highway 70, mm-hmm. and she gets picked up by Mr. Psycho mm-hmm. Killer. There you go.
No?
No.
Wow.
What about the friend?
The friend, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about her friend.
No, his friend.
Or his friend. I mean, yeah, Marty's mm-hmm. friend that he brought back from the psycho ward. This guy's full name was Severin John Balbaday.
Didn't we have somebody who was named Severin in a case before? Wasn't it in the Toynbee Tiles?
Yeah.
Sevi?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That name really sounds familiar.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't...
Can't believe
Is that the first time you'd ever heard Severin?
In Toynbee?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I had a friend growing up named Severin, so...
Oh, really?
It's a ubiquitous name for me. Sorry.
No, I was like, wow.
I thought that was
name.
A Vulcan name.
Rest in peace, Leonard Nimoy.
Balbaday went by the nickname of Bo.
I would too.
All right, I said Balbaday. No, it's Balbaday.
Balbaday.
I'm still trying to learn how to pronounce that name, Balbaday. But Bo was staying with the Smarts. He came back from Reno, mm-hmm. VA, and stayed with the Smarts, sleeping on their couch. Reportedly, he liked to get up at night and wander around outside. It's a little hanky, but maybe he had insomnia.
Well,
yeah, he was also in psychiatric therapy, just like Marty was. Met Sue Sharp on April 8th, 3 days before the murders, and reportedly the next day said he'd like to get to know her better.
Ooh.
Yeah, no.
She was a pretty lady, and she was probably nice to him.
Yeah, could have been, and then probably the dating prospects in that town were not that huge.
Yeah.
I'm betting, yeah. On the night of April 11th, Marty, Bo, and Marilyn got dressed up, and they put on suits and all kinds of nice clothes and stuff, and they went to the back door bar in Ketty.
Which they walked to.
Yeah, they walked to.
It's that close. They walked to it.
It's a tiny little town.
Yeah.
And that, reportedly, they left about 9:30, and they stopped, according to some accounts, they stopped by Sue Sharp's house to ask if she wanted to tag along, and she said she wasn't interested.
She said, look at how many kids I have here.
Yeah, yeah, and they were all like, oh, the kid just puts kids to bed, you know?
No.
It was the early 80s.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, and so she had four kids there and two more that were out hitchhiking or something, or still in Quincy at the time, so she just didn't want to go, and apparently she didn't drink anyway, so, you know, why'd she want
to,
but...
Makes sense to turn down the offer.
Yeah. So they hung out at the back door bar, and then about 12:30 or so, they changed the music in the bar. Yeah, they changed the type of music they were playing, and Bo got really angry about it.
It's because he liked country, and they were playing rock and roll.
Uh-huh.
That's what gets me riled up every time.
Yeah, I'm ready to kill people over stuff like that. They went back to cabin 26, and Marilyn went to bed. And at this point, Marty wanted to go back to the bar, but Bo was still really furious about the music change. They even called the bar. Marty called the bar and complained about it to the bartender and all sorts of
tells
stuff.
Tells you the size of the town when you can call the bar and complain about the music.
Yeah. And Bo was like... Marty wants to go, but Bo is so mad, he just has to calm down for a while. So, really? Yeah.
Well, some people get like that.
Yeah. But eventually they did go back to the bar and return at some unknown time because Marilyn was asleep. When she woke up, Marty was in bed with her and Bo was asleep on the couch. Who knows what they were up to or what when they came back.
Well, they did go to the bar. Evidently, they were there at last call.
Yeah. Marty was wearing a green suit for heading to the bar, but the next day the suit was gone, and Marilyn said she never saw it again, which is suspicious. But on the other hand, she moved out of that place on April 12th, so it could be. Yeah, I mean, so I woke up the morning of April 12th, the green suit was not there.
Yeah.
I never saw it again.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But when she moved out, she said she was afraid of what Marty might do to her and the kids. But again, that doesn't necessarily indicate that Marty was a murderer and that she was afraid of getting murdered.
She just might have realized, I'm in a not good situation, and oh my God, my neighbor just got brutally murdered.
Yeah.
I should probably make a life change.
Yeah,
I know. Seriously. I told you before, you got Justin arrived home from cabin 28 around 8:30 a.m. and told her that everybody was dead. At the same time that day, about that same time, a guy named Jim Meeks went over to Marty Smart's house and saw that he was burning yard debris in the yard and said that he believed he saw a pair of shoes in the middle of the pile of burning debris. I don't really know. I'm not sure about this because... The thing about it is my understanding of it is when they went back to the house and before they returned to the bar, they changed their clothes. I mean, you've read that in some accounts, right?
I think I have.
Yeah.
There were so many papers. The one website that I think all three of us drew on pretty heavily for like the reports and the papers, because it was a plethora of information.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually information overload.
Yeah,
so it's made it kind of hard to pull details.
Some say they changed their clothes. Of course, on the other hand, if you're all gussied up and wearing your best clothes,
you're going to want to change.
Well, if to commit a murder, yeah.
No, I mean, if you you came home. So this is what happens for me. I don't know about you guys, but you get all dressed up and you go out and you're like, yeah, this is fun. And you go home and you're like, I wish I was wearing jeans right now.
Yeah,
I'll put jeans and, a sweatshirt on. And, let's go back out to the bar. Yeah, okay, yeah, no problem.
That happens to me every time I wear my best dress.
Yeah.
I know. Your evening
No,
gowns?
But no, I can see that.
You know, it's, you're not, you probably get dressed up because Marilyn was like, wouldn't it be fun if we all got dressed up? And
Well, and this is not a place where guys typically wear a suit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it seems unlikely that Marty and Bo would be like, you know what would be really fun is if we put on our suits.
I know.
Yeah.
But, you
so
know,
I could just see a guy in a collared shirt and a suit or in a tie for a couple of hours having a couple of drinks. Mm-hmm. And the first thing you want to do is get out of that.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And actually, probably Bo wanted to be all dressed up because he was probably hoping to find him a woman in the bar. And after spending a few hours in the bar, he realizes that his hopes of actually finding somebody in the bar were pretty much nil.
And he's super angry.
Yeah, he's super angry. So why keep wearing the suit, when there's no women in the bar anyway? So they probably changed.
Yeah,
so.
Don't use up your good juju.
No, absolutely not. Supposedly, Marilyn told Jim Meeks later in that day, that's April 12th, that she'd seen a bloody hammer in the basement of Cabin 26.
Wasn't the hammer found at the scene?
Yeah, it was. It's clearly visible in one of the crime scene photographs.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I know.
This sounds like a disgruntled ex-wife.
Well, I got to tell you, I have never seen that many cabins in the woods that have basements, actually. So that kind of makes me wonder right there.
Yeah, well, I guess my argument pro her having seen that is I don't know that you would be able to tell if it was only one hammer.
It could have been more than one hammer, too.
You know, if it were two guys.
Two guys, two hammers.
Two hammers.
Well, didn't Martin also tell the cops, oh, by the way, my hammer went missing? He told them that.
He made a lot of interesting statements. There was one, they called in the Department of Justice, and the DOJ investigators had a little interview with him, and he made a couple of other sort of semi-incriminating statements.
Yeah, he said some weird stuff.
Yeah. Talking about his stepson's possibly observing the crime, he said something in the order of, it's possible and I just didn't notice him. Which is like, well, really?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that they should have kind of maybe zeroed in on and kind of hammered away at. And they really, it was kind of a lackluster investigation.
Well, yeah, there were so many things that were botched. There was, so there was Johnny. And then what was the other boy that was
Dana?
The boys that were in the room that survived.
Oh, there was Justin and also Ricky and Greg.
Yeah, and I can't remember which one of them was being interviewed by the Department of Justice, but you can hear, if you listen to the tape, it's the guy saying, you know, the time and the date, and his name, and interviewing subject so-and-so, and puts the mic over to the kid to get a mic test to make sure everything's working. And then the rest of the tape is blank.
Oh, really?
The thing just shut off or just stopped recording, and they did the test to make sure it worked, but didn't have the aptitude to go, oh, that's funny. The little lights on it stopped moving. Oh, well, we'll keep going. This got botched
actually,
all over the
got
place.
Botched. In fairness to them, we've actually committed the same mistake once.
Nobody's life was at stake.
Yeah, I know.
In fairness, nobody's life was at stake in that either. The lives had been
already. That's a good point.
Well, Joe's life was kind of at stake because I was just so done with that story. Back to this botched investigation.
The botched investigation. Well, just another word about the hammer. There might have been two hammers. He might have taken his bloody hammer home with him, but wouldn't he have washed it off?
But there was all of the tools. Okay, so it was a hammer
and a knife.
And a steak knife.
Yeah.
And a butcher knife. And a butcher knife.
Yeah.
And they had all been wiped down at the scene of the crime.
Yeah.
They weren't covered in gads of blood.
No.
Okay. Well, if you took the time to wipe down the tools of the murder and leave them at the murder scene, why in the hell would you take a bloody one home?
No, hell no. No, and you want to, if you possibly can, you want to leave the murder weapon at the scene.
Yeah.
Of course you do.
That whole
murder 101.
There was a bloody hammer in the basement thing. That doesn't jive with what was at the scene of the
crime. It's nonsense. And I don't know if Marilyn was lying. More likely Jim Meeks was lying. Or maybe somebody just made this stuff up and stuck it into the record at some point. Let's talk about theories for a little bit.
Are we not there yet?
No. And there's a lot more. If you guys want to do more research, follow some of the links. There's a lot of stuff out there. Just to make this not a 5-hour episode, I've omitted lots of stuff. and also because some of it's conflicting and it's fragmentary. So-and-so, you know, Bob C. said this. And, you know,
well, yeah, a lot of it is recountings 5, 10, 20, 30 years later.
Oh, yeah.
And those are bound to conflict from statement 1 to statement 5. A person's going to change it without intending to over time.
Absolutely. Memory is a tricky thing. Okay, back to our theories. Sue, number one. Sue was the target of the attack. She was the one they wanted to kill. Some people theorize she was bound and gagged and then forced to watch as John and Data were murdered and Tina was tied up for abduction. So whoever did this really hated Sue. Yeah. If this is what happened, then no doubt they explained in detail, or he explained in detail what he was going to be doing with Tina. just to make her swimmer predicament that much more horrible before murdering her. But I don't understand why he or they didn't haul the other two children out of the back bedroom and kill them, too.
If they were strangers, there'd be no, you wouldn't know that those kids were back there.
That's possible. You'd think you'd have a look around, but maybe not.
I guess, yeah.
Well, but you could say, is there anybody else home? No, all my kids are sleeping at the neighbor's house as a preventative statement to protect your children.
Yeah. I mean, But, you know, if Sue was the target of the attack, the only person in town who seemed to have a grudge against her was Marty, right? Marty Smart.
Who would have known how many kids she had?
Who would have known that his stepson is in the other room? He would have known that. This is one of the reasons I have strong doubts, even though everybody else thinks Marty Smart did this. I have strong doubts that he did. I mean, I really don't.
Because?
I really do think I have doubts. Well, just because he had a criminal history and a history of violence, but never anything this savage. Never anything this savage. And he would have done it. If he wanted to kill Sue, he would have found a way to maybe abduct her, take her out in the woods and kill her out there. He wouldn't do it with his stepson in the next room, do you think?
Mm-hmm. Again, this assumes, I mean...
This assumes that he's like, you know, a
rational
person.
This assumes a lot of logic.
It assumes a lot of that, but it also, you know, just because Sue was the target of, I guess Sue was the target of the attack, assumes that somebody knew who Sue was, right? Okay. All right,
yeah.
Never mind.
Well,
I was going to say it assumes that somebody, that person knows Sue, but...
Well, yeah, if she's an intended target, then they have to know who she is.
Yeah, well, there's another possibility in somebody that didn't know Sue, but was just a psychopathic jerk. So we'll get to that. That's theory.
Or, you know, somebody gave the boys a ride home and saw Sue and was like, oh, yeah, I would like some of that, thank you.
Yeah.
And then...
Or more likely, I think, saw Tina and saw, hey, I want some of that.
Ah!
I know. It's terrible. But she was the one that was abducted, remember?
That's true. I hate to think about it.
No, I don't either.
Let's
get on to another theory, which is Tina was the reason for the attack and everybody else was collateral damage. So some people have said that Bo really likes young girls. So say if it was Bo, you know, he goes over there and... Well, he's got to deal with the mother, kill her, and then abduct the girl. And then the other two show up, the two boys show up, and so he's got to whack them,
too. So they walk in on it.
They walk in on it. He's got to whack them, too.
Have you also heard about the allegations of the involvement between Marty and Tina?
Yeah, well, I heard something about there was possibly some sort of a relationship there, but...
I have seen stuff that speculates that Tina was pregnant.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she's...
At 12?
It's possible.
It is possible.
It's possible. Or there was fear that she was pregnant by Marty, and that he, thinking that he was going to... protect his world, what he had, and not let that get out and destroy it, went after her. And, of course, that meant Sue was the collateral damage.
Mm-hmm.
And before he could abscond with her and do whatever he intended to do with her to erase that evidence, the other two boys arrived.
Yeah.
I have a really hard time with that, except that, I mean, initially you think, well, if this guy was doing something sexual in nature with this girl, she would have told somebody, except that unfortunately it's not the first time she had been molested by an adult, so she may have just never said. This is
lots of
speculation.
Kids, lots of kids get molested and don't say anything.
Yeah. I mean, that's unfortunately what the pedophiles count on, is that they're too scared to say anything. But this is speculation. I can't say that it's true. I've seen it. A little bit jives, but a lot of it doesn't.
Yeah, I've never seen any strong evidence that indicates to me that that's true. But the other thing about it is that if he needed to get rid of Tina and obviously get rid of the body, because an autopsy would have revealed that she was pregnant, right? So if he needed to do that, there were better ways to do it than killing a bunch of people. He could have easily just set up a meeting with her.
Yeah, especially if he was sleeping with her, right?
Yeah, he could have just, like, you know, sent her up, you know, called her and said, hey, let's get together, and then just take her out in the woods and murder her and bury her body.
I'd like to introduce Exhibit 1.
Yeah.
Alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Get drunk. You make dumb decisions.
Yeah, true.
Although, people make a lot of dumb decisions when they're, I'm just going to fix this now. And then they don't. Mm-hmm. I'm not accusing anything, but yeah, we've all seen that.
Yeah.
I don't buy this one, but
no.
If we're going to run down that avenue, I can see how it could have played out bad, whereas in his head it was very simple, walk in, knock out Sue, take Tina, and get out.
Yeah.
And instead it turns into a bloodbath.
Yeah, well, I got to say he lucked out, because usually when people commit really stupid, off-the-cuff crimes like that, especially multiple murders, they almost always get caught.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of the few that got away with it, if that's what
I'm still not sure that Marty did this at all.
What's next?
Next theory, the three young boys in the bedroom did it.
What?
Yeah. I actually got this one off of Reddit. Somebody. Yeah.
Oh, sometimes I love Reddit.
Actually, the guy that put it out there said, you know, this kind of makes sense, but really, come on, it doesn't make sense. They were too young. They had no motive.
Well, I guess, yeah. Okay, so like, young kids do dumb things sometimes thinking they're playing.
Yeah,
right? They think it's like fun, but in reality...
No, there was a time when I was a kid and we were having a sleepover and we got hammers and killed a family. We didn't mean to.
It was an accident. No, I think the thing is that if you think that's fun at ages 5 through 12, you're probably going to exhibit some of those tendencies later in life too.
Yeah,
and it sounds like these boys didn't ever do
No, they would all be in prison for sure. Or hopefully at least.
Well, I mean, that's the beginning of, you know, psychotic behavior. And you would think that there would have been a lot of missing cats and dogs and stuff like that. This is the build-up stage, not the beginning test-it-out stage.
Not the kill your first human being stage.
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought it was a fun theory, so I thought I'd put it in there.
But, yeah, fun.
Thank you for that, sir.
Yeah, it is a fun theory. Yeah, little boys murdering people.
No. Awesome.
Yeah, another theory.
Fun and games.
Yeah, another theory is Charles Ng and Leonard Lake. Have you heard of these guys?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, vicious, couple of vicious serial killers. They had, Leonard Lake had a place in, near Wilseyville, California, which is about 100 miles south of Keddie.
Okay.
And he had this, it was kind of a fairly remote cabin, and he had built himself a dungeon next to the cabin that he, and then, yeah, he, and when...
Dudes that build dungeons.
Yeah.
Things I never want to know.
Yeah. They would, what these guys would do is they would abduct like a family or a group of people. They would usually kill the men and the babies fast, you know, because they didn't really need them, but they keep the women around and then rape them and torture them horribly. And then eventually murder them, too.
This is like, what's that movie, Hostel?
I don't watch movies like that.
So I don't either. Know. That's why I'm asking. This makes me think of like the crap I see in the previews of movies like that.
Yeah. Anyway, but as far as it being the pair of them, if you do a little Googling on these two, yeah, they had a real crime spree there. They killed a bunch of people pretty horribly, too. But you got to rule Charles Ng out because as far as I was able to find, he was in prison until 1982.
That's just like a corrections gone wrong situation.
You know,
I mean, if somebody's already been in jail and then gets released and goes on a rape, torture, murder spree for a couple of years, I feel like something failed there.
He was in military prison, so they weren't really trying to rehabilitate him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but he got out of prison in 1982. He'd been in contact with Leonard Lake already. They already knew each other, and Lake invited him to come up there and live at his cabin. And, you know, they just hang out up there and just occasionally, you know, go out and find some innocent people to abduct and murder horribly.
You know, nice Sunday in.
But what I'm saying, Ng could not have been involved. And by the way, at this point, he was Leonard Lake, who's the guy I'm putting forth as a suspect, remotely possible suspect. Was not yet ensconced in his little remote cabin. It's possible. I'm not saying he lived in Keddie, by the way. He didn't. But who knows? Maybe he was driving through Highway 70, spots a couple of teenage boys hitchhiking, picks them up, takes them back. Because the murders that he and Charles Ng committed together were incredibly vicious. And let's face it, the Keddie murders were also incredibly vicious.
Yeah.
I have no evidence, no proof whatsoever that it was actually him. But it makes sense because Tina was the one that was abducted.
Yeah.
Now, he's mobile. He doesn't have a dungeon or anything like that. He can only take one person with him.
You take the smallest.
Yeah, you take
woman.
The smallest. You take the smallest one. So yeah,
the weakest of the bunch.
Yeah, yeah. Take her, and of course he doesn't have his dungeon, so he can't. He's got to just take her somewhere and you know torture her and then murder her and leave her. The other ones he killed on the spot, and that's what they would do. Again, they would kill the people that they weren't interested in raping first.
I feel like Ng and Lake are the equivalent of, Devin, last week when we talked about the McCann case, there was the random guy that lived in Spain that was listed as a suspect in...
Yeah, the German?
Yeah.
Whose name I can't pronounce.
Yes,
yeah.
Because, well, this is somebody who years later we know is a notorious bad person that was in the same general area.
Exactly.
That's my same feeling about this.
I don't know, there's precedent for it, though. I mean, oftentimes you find after, you know, a serial killer's been caught, you find, oh, well, they also lived in this area where these murders that... are kind of similar or not totally similar happened a couple of years before. It's that testing the waters phase.
It's that workup.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying it's not, but that's my initial impression.
That's fair. Yeah.
No, I think it's definitely something I have really no evidence for, but it just seems to me that, you know, I would think Leonard Lake is as strong a suspect as Marty Smart.
Yeah.
Because you know, Marty Smart, for you know, even though he was kind of screwed up and had an anger problem, he, you know, as far as I can tell, he didn't show the kind of viciousness that it would have taken to commit these murders.
All you have to do is go look at the crime scene photos to kind of understand what we're talking about.
Vicious is the exactly
the word.
Yes, because it not to make a joke, but it was overkill.
It was
absolutely over the top.
It was
what was going on.
It wasn't just getting the job done. It was sadistic. And Leonard Lake was sadistic.
But that's one of the things, it's a weird thing in favor of Martin not being responsible is that in the tapes with him from the cops, he's like, I don't understand how somebody could do that. If I had somebody to kill, I'd get in, I'd get it done, and I'd get out. I wouldn't do all this other stuff. Which, okay, well, maybe that's, you know, him leading the path to defend himself, to lead them off. But at the same time, he sounds like he's just saying, like, dude, that was so weird. Why would you do that? In a normal conversational tone when you listen to it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, remember, only one was gagged. So it was Sue Sharp that was gagged. So,
But the boys weren't.
Well, boys were knocked out.
Yeah, the boys got conked out pretty fast.
They did.
Yeah. But, it looked like Sue was alive for a while and unconscious. And again, it's quite possible she had to witness the murders of those two boys.
Well, and there was a lot of blood on the bottom of her feet, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody's blood.
The one thing, thankfully, that I was really surprised about was there was no sexual misconduct in this whole thing.
Well
like, thankfully, rape never came into this.
As far as they found out
in any of it.
It would have been hard to tell.
For the victims that were left in the cabin,
that's fair.
That was not there.
Yeah.
And that's the weird thing. Okay, well, if the boys are fine, Sue's fine, and Tina's taken. It doesn't make sense. You would think that somebody that was on a let's kill him and have a little sexual fun spree wouldn't have cared. But that's very general, very vague. I understand that before anybody lights up and has a heyday and sends me a Wikipedia article about weird perversions, I know that that's not exactly right. But it just seems like you would have seen more indications of something like that in the whole thing, which is, I mean, personally, I hope that, you know, they took Tina away and then did her in quietly, but I don't know.
I don't understand why they would have done that.
I'm saying what I would like to hear, Joe.
That's what I would like to believe, too, but yeah, I can't conceivably think of a reason why. But anyway, do you guys have any more theories?
No.
Thankfully, no.
Yeah, pretty ugly case. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Good choice, brother.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's but it was time for us to do a hideous Rolf Den Burger again. It's been a while.
True. It was.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think we're going to be able to solve this one, unfortunately, unless we go down there with our magnifying glasses.
Nah.
I think that it's entirely possible. Yeah.
The cabins are gone.
Oh, yeah, sorry, the cabin was demoed in like 2004.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
They were condemned and they finally bulldozed them.
Yeah, and I don't think there were probably people lining up to go live in that cabin anyway.
No.
I think there was
one family did move in there afterwards.
Not very long, I don't think.
And actually, maybe they didn't know, but you know, I mean, you've seen the crime scene photographs. The cabin was an armpit. It was a dump.
Yeah, it was awful.
It was.
I would have to be pretty damn poor before I would live in that place.
Take your college dorm room and put wood paneling and ugly 70s carpet in it, and then 20 years of dirt.
Yeah, exactly.
And
we're talking not wood paneling, the nice stuff, but the stuff that's made out of kind of press board with the laminate stuff. The ugly, nasty stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, the stuff you find in 1950s trailers.
Yeah, yeah.
The kind I grew up in.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, the place was a dump. So I'm glad I didn't have to live there, and I'm glad I didn't live there because I'd be dead. So thank God. All right, so out of theories?
No, I got none.
Out of theories, okay. Well, I think that's it for this week. So sorry, I apologize. I know we usually solve things, but not this week.
What?
Sorry. Yeah.
He admitted it.
I think according to our drinking game, that means that you have to finish like 5 beers or something.
Something.
Sorry about that. For
way to go, Joe.
Yeah.
You're going to make some people hungover.
Yeah, I know. Well, I got to do it. I want to get people drunk. All right. So let me give you some very, very important information. First of all, you want to find our website. You'll find links about this story as well as the story itself to be downloaded. That's thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. You can leave comments and, of course, listen to episodes. Of course, you can also find us on iTunes, which is probably where you're finding us. So remember, subscribe. Give us a review. Give us a comment. We like that stuff. You can stream us pretty much anywhere. I mean, I don't know how many streaming services there are nowadays.
A
lot of them. So find one of those and stream us. You can find us on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter, where we are Thinking Sideways, not thinking, but Thinking Sideways. And if you want to send us an email, you can send us an email at thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. Suggestions are great. If you just want to tell us how awesome we are, that's great. If you have constructive criticism, that's good too.
Oh, don't forget, on the website there is, on the right-hand panel, the link for shirts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because we do have
iPhone cases.
And iPhone cases.
And mugs. Right.
And coffee cups.
And mugs. Okay,
we got a couple of different things, but those are there's a link for Zazzle that takes you right to our store. So those are there as well.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, I need to buy my shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We have to buy our own shirts.
Yep.
No, I know. Zazzle wrote us an email just yesterday saying they're running out of stock. So you better buy your t-shirts and mugs soon.
Soon, yeah.
Yeah, and I better do the same.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. Another mystery down. You guys have any remaining thoughts?
I really don't want to have to walk to my car right now.
let's all huddle in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Lock the door.
No.
Yeah.
There's plenty of water.
Let me get my
facilities.
Axe first.
We'll take some cans of food. It'll be safe.
Yeah.
All right. Bye, guys.
All right. So long for this week.
Bye.
Why are you giving me that weird look?